Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, I am so delighted that you are able to join me because we are going to be discussing something that is even related to what we have been experiencing the past few weeks. And what is that? That's the coronavirus. It has affected countries around the world, and it has made us aware that as the human community, this is something in today's world that easily can be taken from one point to another. Now, what about staying physically well? How is it that you can take a positioning with yourself physiologically and find out what's happening with your body? How is it working? Is it in that positioning of optimum health that you feel that you should be enjoying? If not, I think you're going to find my guest, Kristen Grace McGarry, a woman that has a perspective that I feel is one that's been worked towards for a long time. And she decided she wanted to write a book about it. What is it? It's Know Your Blood, Know Your Health. Preventing disease and being able to know what is right for your body through functional blood chemistry analysis. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks so much for having me.
Kristen, medicine is something that has always interested you, but what was it that made you decide that you wanted to make the level of knowledge that you could share with other people relate specifically to the blood?
Well, I think what was most impactful in choosing this was my own health journey. And I had been very ill as a young adult and eventually was diagnosed with fibromyalgia and healed that in about 2 years' time. And one of the things that helped me heal it was functional blood chemistry analysis. And when it really got under my skin, so to speak, was 10 years later when I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. But I had gone misdiagnosed and undiagnosed suffering for years. And it was really functional blood chemistry analysis that saved my life. And so I decided to dive into that kind of study to begin sharing it with my patients. And then in order to get it out there more in the world, write this book.
Functional blood chemistry analysis. Now, this chapter in your book, you have a subtitle to it, Digging Up the Clues to Good Health. It has often been said with Western medicine that we treat symptoms rather than getting to the root cause of what's going on in the body. You had to go in for training with this. When someone typically has a blood test, there is what I would call a very surface level of evaluating the blood. And I'm not saying that that is bad, but if someone is going through certain issues, like you had fibromyalgia, and you know you had something else that came up later with the autoimmune system, which is something that is attacked, for example, by the coronavirus, what is it that one has to do to balance it out? Because sometimes you have indicators that when they're read, there's automatically a judgment. People are put in boxes. What might be normal for someone else is not necessarily normal for you. How do you make that determination?
Great question, Donna. And really, it has to do with the reference ranges. Let's start there. So the reference ranges that you'll find on the right-hand side of your lab. It's the reference ranges that the doctor or the naturopath or the chiropractor, or the functional medicine doctor, will compare your results to those reference ranges. And they'll say you fall within normal or out of normal. Well, those reference ranges are a problem because I have a whole explanation of this that goes deeper into it in my book, because those reference ranges are mostly based on people who are not well. And so if you're being compared to people who are not optimally healthy, then it's not necessarily an accurate range of health for you. So that's the starting point. And so my reference ranges are different. They're based more on health and wellness. So the reference ranges are tighter. They're more narrow. And what this means is that I can find things before you have a symptom, or I'll find subclinical issues that normal doctors and naturopaths will overlook, because we can really start to find the root and prevent suffering.
You make a comment in your book that the days of comprehensive annual physical examinations with laboratory assessments seems to be behind us. I couldn't agree more. Anymore, when you go in for a physical, it's not like the physical used to be done in the past. It's, well, they'll check your heart and they'll take a stethoscope and ask you to breathe deeply, and then that's it. I mean, I've been in given physicals where they didn't check your throat, they didn't check your ears, they did not sit and spend time with you, ask you questions about your lifestyle or anything else. That just seems to have gone out the window. And when you're dealing with anybody of any age, the more comprehensive information you have, the better it's going to be, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think all those things are important. I think looking and touching patients, you know, touching their body, listening to their heart, taking their pulse, looking down their throat, looking in their ears, all of these things are important. Asking them questions about their life and their nutrition and their stressors and their relationships, these things are so important. And most doctors are they just don't have the luxury of time to do it. In the current, I hesitate to call it a healthcare system, in the current sick care system, which is a more accurate term, if doctors don't have the time because of the insurance companies and what they allow in terms of patient time allotted for each visit is just very, very short. And this is why looking for someone who does functional medicine or holistic integrative healthcare providers who can spend more quality time getting to know you and your family, who can really dive more deeply into your life and look at you as an entire being instead of, you know, 5 minutes in and out. And the functional blood chemistry analysis is a piece of that more comprehensive approach.
You bring out a comment in your book, and there's so many different points of information. I'm just pulling these out at random. You bring up an example of a patient being put on the drug metformin because they were pre-diabetic as a preventative measure, yet the doctor never gave any instruction nor any reference to how nutrition and lifestyle were very important. And that metformin, when someone is taking that, it can cause mitochondrial dysfunction in the skeletal muscles. And there's a number of other side effects. This is something that I think is of concern to more and more people. There are more and more individuals that are speaking up and speaking out, like yourself, saying we as consumers need to be more knowledgeable, and we need to know that we do have some options to work with. When you look at the side effects of any kind of medication that you are taking, and I'm not against medicine, but I think we have to realize that sometimes there's people on 14 to 16 public, you know, medications that they have to take daily. And I know of one person who had 21 medications that they were on. With the functional blood testing. How can this help someone understand what's going on in their body? And how can they perhaps become aware of the right questions to ask a physician relative to the side effects of the medicine? And sometimes the chemical cocktails create more harm than good.
It's true. I don't even call them side effects anymore, Donna. I call them other effects, right? They're just other effects of the drug. They're not side at all. They're quite forward, front and present. And so I considered this, and so I added a chapter to the book on how to work as a team with your physician, how to have these conversations with your doctor, how to ask the right question so that you get the answer you really need that's working for you, how to work with your doctor and question them without being disrespectful, but really honoring the time and the commitment they've put into studying medicine. It's just unfortunately in a system that doesn't allow a comprehensive approach usually. And so I address that in the book because I think it's so important. And your second question is also very important about, well, how exactly does this specialized blood work help? Well, I have many more markers that I order on a functional blood chemistry panel. So your doctor or your naturopath usually will order 10 to maybe 30, if you're lucky, markers. I want to see closer to 70. That's more than half. And I also want to see a urinalysis. And I liken it to a 10,000-piece puzzle, Donna. And if you only have half of the puzzle pieces and they're still turned upside down, it's really difficult to put the puzzle together. But if you have all the puzzle pieces and they're turned right side up so you can actually see them, it's much easier to put the puzzle together. And this is how I approach functional blood chemistry analysis. To me, all those lab markers are the puzzle pieces. And my ability to read the lab in a unique way is like turning the puzzle pieces upright so you can see what they are, so you understand how they fit together. Another difference is that in regular Western standard lab analysis, people are often looking at individualized markers like cholesterol, blood sugar. But I look at patterns as well, and that makes a huge difference in putting together your health puzzle. And these are why we get so much more information about what's going on in your body. And it's from there that recommendations arise. So it's from that place of knowledge that I can better suggest a lifestyle shift or a nutritional change, or on occasion I have to refer out to a physician and work as a team. Maybe someone really does need a medication. I'm not afraid to do that and to work with other doctors. It's so important for the patient to get the best of all of our areas of expertise.
You have very detailed sections on many different aspects of blood work, for example, the cholesterol, sugar, etc., that you had mentioned. And I was fascinated with the section on cholesterol because there is information in here that I really feel is extraordinarily important because it's automatic. And I know of a number of people this has been done to, and it's just not appropriate. I've talked to scientists that have been involved with this, and it is about the statins. Now, statins serve a purpose relative to inflammation. I'm not a doctor. This is just something that I've learned from various scientists that have researched this. But cholesterol is vitally important in the body, and statins literally go in. And I call it a rape of the body system, of the cholesterol. And there are so many things in the way of side effects that can really cause harm, especially over a period of time, and they're not meant to be taken forever. And, of course, the liver manufactures it. And I was fascinated with you said that it didn't come from the foods that you eat. Now, that is contrary to what most physicians will tell their patients. And that is something that there is such a level of parroting among different environments of medicine. And I think a lot of these protocols are adopted by different aspects in the medical community as the end-all of end-all. And there are people that are suffering from a big misunderstanding about what it really is. And in some instances, it's even physicians because of what they've been told. How can we get around this kind of ignorance?
Read my book. Talk to your doctors and read more. I think that's how we can start to wake up. And so cholesterol is such an important issue, and I really, really want to empower people with information so that you can be informed consumers and not just go along with what the latest media fad is sharing this week. And the cholesterol issue is so interesting. It's true. Eating fat does not necessarily raise your cholesterol. And yet there's this really, it's a false belief that it does. There are very few foods that will impact it. And there are some genetic conditions that can be strongly impacted by eating fats. But for the most part, eating fat is not what raises your cholesterol. Now, eating sugar and carbohydrates and having really bad food combining, now that can actually raise your cholesterol as a side effect, another effect of something called insulin resistance. And I see this all the time. And this is why diabetes and cardiovascular disease go hand in hand often. And I go into this in more detail in the book, but in a user-friendly way, not too sciencey, but enough to help you understand the basis of it so that you can have an intelligent conversation with your doctor and ask the right questions. And if you do have a cholesterol or blood sugar issue, this book is going to really empower you with new information.
I don't think in my physicals for years that I have been asked to give a urine analysis. It seems as if this is something that has gone by the wayside. I have even had a physician say, nope, they don't serve a purpose anymore. It's a waste of time. It doesn't really tell us anything. You say that's not the case.
It's not, absolutely not. I get lots of information from a urine analysis. It's so important. It's important to then combine the information I get from that urine analysis with a comprehensive lab. And again, it's this combination. I'm not just looking at one thing. I'm looking at patterns and groupings of things. And if you have something over here but not over there, that tells me something. If you have stuff going on that I can detect in your analysis, that tells me something. It absolutely tells me how your kidneys are functioning. It tells me if you're dehydrated. It tells me what your pH is. It can tell me if you have a kidney stone. It can tell me if you have other issues, like even diabetes we can find through a urinalysis at times. So it gives me a lot of information.
You commented that in your experience that you found that there is a reaction sometimes that people have, to sesame, millet, and quinoa. Now, quinoa is such a nutritious food, and I wouldn't think that many people would have a reaction to that. Is that part of the gluten family?
Well, this is so interesting, and I recently did a Facebook Live on this, And I write about this as well in my first book, Holistic Keto for Gut Health. So there are foods that are similar to the gliadin protein from gluten. They are not glutinous, but they're similar. And if your body's immune system is a little bit off or a little bit out of balance, your body may misidentify those non-glutinous foods as gluten. And quinoa, sesame, white potatoes, eggs, millet, teff, all these different non-glutinous flours and foods, and there's more, there's a long list, can cross-react with gluten and cause an inflammatory response in your body. So although it's touted as a health food, quinoa actually, for some people, can make them very, very sick. I'm actually one of those people, unfortunately. And I discovered this because I was having really, really, really intense gut issues and thought I was eating so well. And then I took the test that checks for cross-reactivity. There's only one test that I'm aware of in the world that does this through a lab that I trust. And on this cross-reactivity test, millet and quinoa and all these foods that I thought were healthy came up for me as causing a lot of inflammation. And so being gluten-free wasn't enough for me, and very often it's not enough for other people, that they really need to fine-tune this. And through functional blood chemistry analysis, I can begin to see these signs of inflammation and gut health that guide us in the right direction to other tests.
This is something, if someone's listening to this, they go, oh my Lord, how many tests am I going to have to take? You have, I think genetic testing has become a tool that can be very, very useful to us. Do you use any of that when you are making evaluations?
Yes, it depends on the person and what their health goals are and also what their budget is for testing. Some of the genetic tests that really are comprehensive, which are my favorite, are a little pricier. You know, they could be as much as $400. $500, but they're very, very comprehensive, and they'll help someone better understand their metabolism and oxidation, like how their body is with antioxidants, what kind of exercise would be best for them, what kind of foods or supplements would be best for them based on their genes, what kinds of health issues they may be predisposed to, so that you can begin to look at nutrition and lifestyle to keep those genes turned off. And so a really comprehensive genetic test is going to talk to you about all these different areas, not just if you have a methylation issue, which is very important, but there's so much more to it. And so depending on the person and what their goals are, their health goals and such, yes, I do like some genetic testing. It can really shine light on things. I know for myself it did. Even as a healthcare provider, I have done a lot of testing on myself, even genetic testing from two different labs. And no lab had shown me a very specific genetic issue I was having, which had to do with B12. And genetically, I don't process B12 well. And no one ever told me, no lab ever discovered this. And then I found this other genetic testing lab that I started working with out of Canada, and they found it. And I was so relieved to finally have the mystery solved. I thought, oh gosh, do I have another autoimmune issue? I was doing all this testing. I couldn't figure it out. And so in my case, genetic testing really solved the mystery. And I was able to discern and figure out what was going on. And that's, you know, I'm a healthcare provider, so I have a lot of skill in doing that. And even for me, it took me a couple of years to get to the root of that. So it can shine a lot of light on people's health issues.
You go into the red cells, the blood cells, what their values are. The body is such a complicated living machine. And there are so many of us that are taking supplements that may or may not serve us. Blood testing can make us aware of what we should be taking for ourselves as individual. I call it individualized medicine, and I think that this is so important. And it's really nice to know that little by little we're getting to that point. And you go into muscles and how some people are built for certain types of exercise and other kinds of exercise can absolutely be detrimental to them. And I have been aware of that for many, many years, but you also have an age factor. Someone in their younger years may be able to do certain things, and then when they get older, the metabolism changes, especially with women. Good Lord, I'd love to get a hold of the person that felt like we needed to go through menopause. It's, you know, all of these different physiological changes that seem to be, in many instances, far more dramatic with women than with men. But men go through them, too. And it's fascinating how, little by little, we're becoming aware of this. But it's really a challenge. For the average individual that might be listening to this and say, wow, this really intrigues me. What kind of tests, and you have a lot of information in your book, Know Your Blood, Know Your Health, and we're going to be giving out your website as well. But in general, besides the average blood tests that are done, how can you go and have these other tests done?
It's challenging because a lot of them aren't covered by insurance because insurance companies are not set up to do much prevention. I actually think it would be lucrative for them to do more prevention, but they're just not set up for that yet. And so a lot of these tests are really hard to get from your conventional Western physician. If you go to a naturopath or you come to see me, I do telemedicine, so I do labs all over the country remotely with people. Then we can order almost anything you want, and really order the comprehensive panel that I think you deserve. But in general, it can be frustrating if you're stuck in the Western medical model because a lot of doctors just won't order the tests that you need, which is why I wrote the book, so you could bring that to your doctor and talk to them about it, or come and have a consultation with me, and I'd be happy to walk you through the explanation. So there are two issues. One is getting the tests ordered, and the next issue is getting it read properly. And it's all too common that your results will show up in your online portal, or, you know, a receptionist will call you and say, everything looks fine. And that's just not good enough. My tests render 6 pages sometimes, 5 or 6 pages of lab results. And I go through that line by line because everything means something. It gives you real grounded information about what's happening inside your body. And especially in the times now with this epidemic of COVID, I think it's more important than ever to take your health back into your own hands and find out what's really going on inside your body. And that includes how your immune system is functioning. And then how to work with that. What to do in your life with your nutrition, with supplements, with exercise. What to do to actually build yourself up so that we can come out of this pandemic or epidemic even stronger than when we began.
You bring something up relative to digestion. You have there again. I'm just pulling things out at random that are in your book. Know Your Blood, Know Your Health. Apple cider vinegar. I was sharing this with a friend of mine just recently, and you recommend 1 teaspoon mixed with 2 ounces of water prior to each meal. And you say sometimes you need maybe 2 teaspoons, a half a teaspoon to 2 teaspoons per meal. And I thought, you know, I've heard about apple cider vinegar, oh, geez, for years. It's an old country style recommendation that was put out. There's been publications on it. This is something, has this been proven that this really does work?
It really does work. Apple cider vinegar is excellent. As in the section around digestion, because I'm noticing on labs, many, many people, especially as they age, have low HCl, hydrochloric acid production in their stomach. Even if they come in and have symptoms of acid reflux, it's often this paradox. It's usually because they have low stomach acid. And I go into more detail in the book on that. And so if someone doesn't have HCl pills to take, having apple cider vinegar before a meal can help you better digest that meal. It also helps your gallbladder. So apple cider vinegar is so fantastic.
Well, Kristen McGarry, you have so much information in this book, and the details are so well stated. Know your blood, know your health. People can find out more about your work and your webinars, etc., by going to Gut Happy Keto, GUTHappyKeto.com. And you are in Costa Rica.
I am in Costa Rica right now, yes.
Well, it's a beautiful country. I've never been there, but I've heard nothing but good things said about it. But you are someone that people can get in touch with if they're interested. I really think this publication, and then, of course, you've been on my show before because you had your book on keto, the keto diet. But this about blood work, I think, is extraordinarily important. And I really feel like it is not only a good read for an individual, but also to share with friends. And then there's also information on your website, perhaps about the labs and that type of thing that people can look into. Kristen Grace McCary, I want to thank you very much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna. It's always a pleasure.
Donna Sebo here. Check out Know Your Blood, Know Your Health. Go to GutHappyKeto.com. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be taking a break. By the way, the phone line is going to be open 253-582-5597. And we're going to be coming back in just a moment. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat.
You're listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you'd like to have an opportunity to be featured on this program or Warriors for Peace heard Wednesdays, please send a copy of your publication along with your contact information to The Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Lakewood, Washington 98497. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review of the publication. Again, the mailing address is Post Office Box 97272, Lakewood, Washington, 98497.
Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597, if you'd like to call in and chat. I wanted to share with you some odds and ends of information, but before I do that, what I wanted to make you aware of is that tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking with Lori Whaley. Now, I met Lori last year at a book event, and she was telling me about her publication, Let the Samurai Be Your Guide. Lori herself is descended from a family of samurai, and we're going to be talking about how the samurai had a very high code of conduct, and we'll be discussing what that was and how, even in today's world, those very same ethics and attitudes can be very, very much applied. Also, I want to remind you that the Donna Sebo Show is on from Monday until Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And then on Wednesdays, it's a doubleheader, and we have Warriors for Peace, which is from 7 to 8 p.m. Now, the shows that are upcoming right this coming week are the female firebrands, Rush with Death, Chrysalis Crisis, Arroyo, Blueprint, The Road to Delano, and much, much more. This programming is very eclectic, and it's my pleasure to be able to share all of these wonderful people and their skills, gifts, stories with you, just like my guest this evening when we're talking about health. Well, we get into so many different areas that if you should find that by subscribing or liking us, really, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and my assistant Deb sends out information about a program that she goes, son of a gun, I'm just not able to hear it. How can I listen to it later on? Well, you've got a couple of options. One of them is that you can go into the archives and you'll find the name of the author, the date of the show, and you'll be able to listen to it. The other option is to turn on the player while you're working on the computer and just let the programs roll through, because the latest 13 to 15 hours are there for your listening pleasure. Also, you can get the newsletter that keeps you informed about upcoming guests and appearances that will be forthcoming. At this time, because of the quarantine, all public appearances have been put off for a while, but we know that that is not going to be permanent. So we will be making the announcement about those appearances that are scheduled that are going to be upcoming as soon as that quarantine is lifted. Also, I want to remind you that if you have Alexa on your phone, all you have to do is ask Alexa to find the Donna Sebo Show, and she will, and by golly, you don't even have to punch anything in on your phone, on your computer, whatever you might want to listen in to the programming. Alexa will bring you right to it. And there are so many changes that are occurring with different applications. We never know what new changes are going to be coming up, and also what we are going to be adding to enable you to be able to access this programming with a lot more ease. And let's see, I think that is going to be able to take care of that information for a while. One of the aspects that I wanted to talk about, because we all share our environment with a multitude of creatures, and many of them are bugs. And no matter where you live, you're going to encounter something that is considered an undesirable. Being a Southern California girl, when I was growing up, there were three things that we did not particularly enjoy. Actually, there were four. Number one was mosquitoes. Number two were cockroaches. Well, I think cockroaches would take the number one position, and then the mosquitoes might take number two. No, maybe number two were silverfish. And then we got to the snails and then the mosquitoes. And the mosquitoes and snails would vie for positioning. But it's interesting how we often are not aware of how so many of these bugs, if you will, are present because they are a part of a food chain that we may not even be aware of, and also that they use different creatures to feed on. Now, I wanted to share with you this evening information about the African bat bug. Now, this is something that I didn't know anything about. The material crossed my desk, and I thought, just goes to show, no matter where you live, unless you go to Antarctica, you're going to encounter something that you're not particularly fond of and really do not want in your environment. And that's what happened with a family that moved to North Carolina. They were in their home, and they find these little itsy bitsy bugs, and they were getting bitten, and they thought, oh, what is this? So they called out the exterminator. When the exterminator got out to their home, they were very much surprised by what the exterminator had to share with them. And this is what they were told. They recognized, because they had captured some of these little tiny bugs, and the exterminator said, this is an African bat bug. Now, I have no idea how it got from Africa to over here, but the species of the bugs are found around the world. And in North Carolina, these bugs, when the exterminator saw what they had caught, said, all right, these are bat bugs. Well, the family was just astonished. They said, what do you mean they're bat bugs? And then the exterminator said, you have bats that are living in the attic of your house. And he said, these little tiny bugs, they feed on the bats. Bats are warm-blooded creatures. And these bugs will go and feed on them because that helps their reproduction. Well, you can imagine how thrilled the family was to hear that. Well, they said, okay, you got to get rid of the bats. We'll get rid of the bugs. And they said, no, it's not that simple. The bats serve a very important purpose. And they consume, bats consume millions and millions of insects that would just overrun everything. Insects are what they feed on. These bugs feed on the bats, and they can go for 1 year just on one meal. And they love to, these bugs just love to keep company with the bats. Well, the family said, that's it. We got to just get rid of them. And I said, nope. You got to wait until fall. It will not do any good to kill the bats because the bugs are still going to be here. We're going to have to go up into the attic, and the bats in the fall are going to leave. They're going to fly out. So we need to go up to the attic. We need to tidy up everything, clear any droppings that might be there. We need to clear out the whole attic area. And then what we need to do is seal up all the crevices so that the bats don't come back in. And then we're going to have to go after the bugs. But you know, the bugs were not that easy to get rid of. Their close relative is the bed bug. Now the thing is, the bugs, when they will be in a house and they decide they want to have you for lunch, they will leave a bite, but it doesn't cause any harm. And there's no diseases that comes from it. But they usually come and bite, you know, the person when they're sleeping. And they're very, very, very tiny. And that's just what they are. So they try to deal with it in the best way that they can. And I think the family eventually got rid of them once that attic was cleaned out and the bats were not able to come back into the house. But you know, it's interesting. Bats are fascinating creatures. And so in so many environments, they have been demonized without an appreciation for their value. And I would suggest, if you ever have the opportunity to go to Austin, Texas, that you go downtown and you stop on a bridge. And I did this. And of course, it's very well known in Austin. And tourists by the thousand go there just to see this happening. And it's at sunset. And you go out on that bridge and you wait. And you'll see one lead bat go out. And then the next thing you know, you will see literally thousands of these little bats come out from underneath the bridge. They've migrated in from an area in Mexico, and they have these migrations every year. They follow the bug populations. They fly out, and this wave, this undulating wave of black, you will see go out. And it is absolutely amazing. Now, for some of you listening to it, you might say, oh, that's the worst thing I'd ever want to see. Let me tell you, Austin was plagued with malaria and a lot of diseases because there was a time when the people of Austin literally eradicated all the bats from the area. That was before they understood how important those bats were. They started getting massive explosions of mosquito populations. Nature has a way of balancing things out. Well, there was a gentleman, a scientist, and there's recognition given to him of pathways along the water areas in Austin, in the downtown area. And he said to people, because he had researched bats, he said, if you will bring bats back in to this environment, you're going to find that you won't have the problem with the epidemics of malaria, because mosquitoes carry the disease and some other things as well. And by golly, it took some convincing that they let the bats in and they don't have the problem with the malaria infestation, nor did they have a problem with some other things, because the bats that were going out by the thousands, they were literally eating billions of bugs, especially in the growing season. And there are those seasons for that. And again, the bats follow their food chain, and that's bugs. So if you ever have the occasion to be in Austin, Texas, I would recommend you have the experience of standing on the bridge so that you can see this phenomenal effect of a natural, what do I want to say, bug population controlling factor, and that is these amazing little bats. The history is just phenomenal. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I wanted to share with you something by Napoleon Hill, and I really have had nothing but the deepest admiration for this man who took 20 years of his life. He was given the challenge by Carnegie to find out what empowered people to become successful. And you may or may not know about his book, Think and Grow Rich. Well, there was an original publication called The Laws of Success that he published, and I am fortunate enough to have a copy of that. It's about 4 inches thick, and it was his original manuscript from which Think and Grow Rich came from. It is a powerful publication. Now, Napoleon Hill made a comment. He said, "You may be wealthy for all I know. That is not success. You may have a splendid education, for all I know, but that isn't success either. You may have wealthy parents, but neither is that success. For you must remember that wealth, as measured in dollars and cents, is an evasive thing which sometimes takes wings and flies away. The only real, permanent, and worthwhile success is represented by the character you are building." This is something that I think we're seeing demonstrated. People are, because of the circumstances that we're experiencing, it has been my observation, there is a thoughtfulness, there is an awareness that we need to be able to help each other. There's also this understanding that life is not always fair, that life is going to present challenges of one type or another. And when we can work together as a team by being thoughtful about what it is we put in our minds and how we control our attitudes, it makes all the difference in the world. When you feed your mind with good material, good information, when you are willing to give attention to what you can do to adapt to what if changes are necessary, when you do that, then you are empowering yourself. If you get stuck in the trap of complaining or whining or condemning, you're not resolving anything. You're staying stuck in a bunch of muck. So why not do yourself a favor? Feed your mind, feed your attitudes with that that's going to nourish your own growth and your own development, keeping you in a mind space that is going to support you physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. That is really what we need to remember. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing this show so much, because I find there are so many good people. I think of the guests that I have had this evening. This is all about wellness. This is about you having the opportunity to empower your own knowledge, to help empower a physician who might be working with you. This is so important. I think you're worth it. What do you think? When we do this for ourselves, then we're going to come out ahead. We're going to end up being winners, and we're going to be able to share that knowledge with other people. And I like to think again that that is one of the gifts that this programming brings to you, and also what it gives to me is an awareness that we have a lot to offer in life, and in offering it in life, we have a chance to experience life with a richness that, well, just keeps getting better. And we also have the opportunity to extend our knowledge and our understanding to others that may need to be aware of it so that they too can stand in their own individuality and in their awareness of their strengths and their opportunities to give the best of themselves to life itself. You know that with this programming, talking about the paranormal, the unusual, the weird, the strange is something I absolutely love to do. Well, there's a gentleman that has passed on. His name is Patrick Mahoney. And this is a man who decided that he really wanted to get into the investigation of the paranormal. And he had conversations with some people that were just extremely respected, very intelligent people, not prone to what we call fantasies and woo-woo stuff. These were people that were very grounded in life. And one of these individuals that crossed Patrick Mahoney's path was a gentleman by the name of Gerald Brockhurst. Now, he was a member of the English Royal Academy. Now, this academy, for you to go to this academy, not only do you have to be extremely skilled, but usually by the time you finish your study at the academy, people are going to want you to do their portraits, etc. And Gerald Brockhurst was very well known for his portraits. He had been given a lot of recognition for his portraits of the Duchess of Windsor and the famous movie star Marlene Dietrich. He had this knack of being able to get the likeness of someone with just a few sittings. Well, people that were famous that would sit with him for the portraits, they had very busy schedules quite frequently, so not having to sit for weeks at a time while someone is painting them in full-size portrait images was very, very nice. He would just have them sit for, you know, a couple of two or three seatings, maybe four. But this was a man that was gifted in a very special way. He had what we might call a photographic visual memory. And he had mastered, through his training and through application, techniques for portraitures. And certain people he found, after they would do a sitting with him, left a gift when they would leave. And what was this gift? He said it was an etheric double of the individual. And that etheric double would be available for Mr. Brockhurst whenever he wanted to do a portrait of someone. Now, what he would do when someone would sit for a portrait the very first time, he would really pay attention to them. He would visually memorize certain things and then do a little sketching. But he was really fixating in his mind the image of that individual, and they were there in his memory. Then he would put the canvas away, and he'd have another person come in that was sitting for a portrait. Now, if it was you or me, after that person was gone, if we didn't have a photographic memory, we'd have to have them come back and sit again, which was the typical thing that a lot of portrait artists did. He didn't have to do that. He would find when he was ready to work on a particular portrait. He would then locate, that's the word he used, he would locate the etheric double, have it sit in a chair, and proceed to paint it just as if the sitter was right there with him. Now, what he said to Patrick Mahoney is that this etheric double actually appeared more real than not. He said it was a better likeness than the actual sitter that would be in front of him. Now, there was another situation that happened with Gerald Brockhurst that he related to Patrick that was quite interesting. He had gone to a particular town. This was the town of Carnac in Brittany. He loved it. It was summertime. Flowers were in bloom. He loved to do landscape painting. And this one evening that he was there, he was sitting outside at a tavern. And he said, oh, I see all of these people going by, and there's this young girl that stands out in the whole crowd. It's just like a light beamed on her. He said it was a beautiful evening, and he looked at her. She was this little bitty wisp of a girl, and she was wearing a kerchief around her head. She had long blonde hair. He said she had a very pretty face, but her face was so sad, and she just walked past, and he couldn't let go of the image of her in his mind. And he said it was so vivid, and she stayed with him. Well, he was in his hotel room in Karnak, and it was a few nights later, he thought, this girl's not leaving my mind. I'm going to draw her out. So he decided he was going to picture the face, her hair, and try to recall exactly what had become fixed in his memory. And he had a chair set up just like he would do with a normal portrait situation. And he saw an arm appear. And then he saw her dress appear right there. And he said it had nothing to do with him following the same process like he did in his studio, where he would have this etheric double. He said she was actually coming in front of him, and he said her sadness was very, very evident. And then someone knocks on the door of his room. And he opens the door part way, and as it turns out, it's the proprietor of the hotel. His wife is there delivering a telegram to Gerald Brockhurst, and she looks through the open space that the door provided, and she actually sees the girl in the chair. And she looks at him, and he said, my goodness, I wonder, did the proprietor's wife actually see the girl in the chair? As it turned out, police came by the very next day. And they said, we know, according to the wife of the proprietor of the hotel here, that she saw a young woman by the name of Millie Leclerc. Where is she? He said, I don't know who you're talking about. Well, the police proceeded to search his room because the wife of the proprietor had described her exactly. Said, I know the girl. I've seen her. She was in his room. Well, the girl had been missing. Now, Mr. Brockhurst was totally absolved of any wrongdoing, and the reason was that it was not too long after they had been investigating him that the young woman's body was found at the bottom of a steep and an isolated cliff that was along the coast. She had committed suicide on the night that he chose to sketch her. She appeared to him because there was that link with him being the artist, and she materialized for that little bit of time in the room to such a degree that the proprietor's wife had actually seen her. And of course, he was absolved of anything that possibly would have connected him with her. Stories like this are not unusual. When I was a girl, I can recall reading about a woman who in the Second World War did portraits with soldiers that before they left to go serve, she would do a portrait, and they often would send it to their families. She didn't charge the soldier. She was doing it as a contribution to those that were serving in the military. This one occasion, a young man sat down with her, and she started drawing him, and she was just chatting with him like artists do when they're doing their work. And she finally finished, and she said to him, well, I'm all done. What do you think? Well, he gets up out of the chair that he was sitting in, walks over behind her, and looks at the portrait that she has done. He gasped, and he said, I don't believe it. And she said, what do you mean? He said, you have drawn my brother. She said, no, I didn't. I was drawing you. She turns around, and she looks at him, and then she looks at what she had drawn. It wasn't the same person.
This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless, be well, and I'll be talking with you tomorrow evening. Bye for now.
Been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.